Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Friday, April 23rd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. The Courier is forecasting a cloudy day with a chance of shower, winds from the south 8 to 16 miles per hour. We'll see a high of 56 degrees today and a low of 44 tonight, again under mostly cloudy skies with chances of the shower. Looking around the region today, cloudy today and tonight with a shower in places, mostly cloudy and breezy tomorrow. Sunday, times of clouds and sun, breezy in the afternoon. Monday and Tuesday will be windy with sun and areas of low clouds. The sun rose this morning at 6:16 a.m. and sets tonight at 8:01 p.m. The next phase of the moon will be on April 26th when it will be full. There are four lead stories on the front page today, and they include U.S. rejoins climate fight, Waterloo expects to retain students, woman who ran down kids pleads guilty to hate crimes, and we will begin with man guilty of attack on babysitter. This story was filed by Jeff Reinitz, Waterloo. A traveling construction worker has been found guilty of pulling a teenage babysitter into a rented house where he was staying and trying to sexually assault her in 2019. Judge Brad Harris released his written verdict during a brief hearing Thursday, finding 45-year-old Saul Santos Vasquez Martinez guilty of the charges of second-degree kidnapping. Quote, the court also finds that defendant removed the babysitter from outside the residence to inside his residence. Her testimony is more credible than that account given by the defendant. The removal of the babysitter from the outside public location to a bedroom of a private residence significantly reduced the risk of detention and is significant apart from the assaultive behavior, Harris wrote in his verdict. The defense had argued that Vasquez was intoxicated at the time of the incident. Vasquez was also charged with assault with intent to commit sexual abuse, causing injury, and the judge found him guilty of a lesser charge, a misdemeanor that didn't include the injury finding. Sentencing will be at a later date, and Vasquez remains in jail until then. The kidnapping charge carries up to 25 years in prison, and the assault charge is punishable by up to 2 years in prison. Vasquez waived his right to a jury trial, allowing the judge to hear the evidence and decide a verdict. Testimony in the bench trial concluded in March. Prosecutors said Vasquez had watched a 16-year-old girl and a 6-year-old she was looking after play outside near his Cedar Falls home in July 2019. He photographed them with his phone as they drew with sidewalk chalk. When the 6-year-old went inside to watch TV, the babysitter remained outside picking up toys, and he called over to her. He grabbed her by the wrist when she approached and pulled her inside, where he groped her and led her towards the bedroom. She eventually escaped his house, and police found him inside when they arrived. Prosecutors said the babysitter suffered a scratch on her chest from the incident. Authorities said Vasquez first denied any involvement, claiming he had been sleeping. He later admitted to touching her, but told police he let her leave of her own will. Authorities said Vasquez, an El Salvador native, was in the country illegally. He had been living in Kansas and came to Cedar Falls for a construction job, according to testimony at the trial. Iowa woman pleads guilty to hate crimes for running down children. This story was filed by the Associated Press. Des Moines. A Des Moines woman has pleaded guilty to federal hate crimes for intentionally driving her SUV into two children in 2019 because she said she thought one was Mexican and the other was a member of the Islamic State group. Nicole Poole Franklin, 43, entered the pleas Wednesday in a Des Moines federal court on two counts of violating the U.S. Hate Crimes Act for trying to kill the children in separate attacks because of their races. She pleaded guilty Monday to two state counts of attempted murder in the same December 9, 2019 attacks, the Des Moines Register reported. Prosecutors said Franklin intentionally jumped a curb in Des Moines that afternoon and struck a black 12-year-old boy, injuring one of his legs. During her hearing Wednesday, Poole said she thought the boy was of Middle Eastern descent and was a member of ISIS. Minutes later, Franklin ran down a 14-year-old Latina girl on a sidewalk, leaving her with injuries for which she was hospitalized for 2 days. Police said Franklin told them she hit the girl because she is Mexican. About an hour later, Franklin was arrested at a local gas station where officers said she had thrown items at a clerk while yelling racial slurs at him and other customers. Franklin has said she is schizophrenic and has post-traumatic stress disorder. Last year, a judge ruled that she wasn't mentally competent to stand trial, but she was later restored to mental competency and ordered to face trial. The federal counts carry a possible life prison sentence, but prosecutors recommended that Franklin be sentenced to 27 years behind bars and that her federal sentence be served at the same time as her state sentence. On the state counts, Franklin faces up to 25 years on each attempted murder count. It wasn't clear if the other state counts, including hate crimes, would be dropped as part of her guilty plea in state court, the Register reported. Waterloo expects to retain students. Superintendent looking to Waterloo School's unique programs to retain students who may soon be able to leave. This story is filed by Andrew Wind and begins with a photograph of Superintendent Lindemann. Waterloo. Superintendent Jane Lindemann is looking to the unique opportunities that Waterloo Community Schools can provide for its students to blunt the impact of a bill affecting open enrollment, which the governor may sign into law. House File 228 was sent to Governor Kim Reynolds this week after an amendment by the Senate was approved in the House. The legislation would no longer allow the 5 school districts in the state that have voluntary diversity plans, including Waterloo, to deny open enrollment requests based on requirements of those plans. The amendment would put the bill into effect as soon as it's signed, exempting those 5 districts from the already passed open enrollment deadline this year. The March 1st deadline would still apply in future years. But Lindemann said the unique signature programs the district has developed since its diversity plan was first implemented for the 2008-09 school year will help it better retain and attract students if the bill becomes law. Among those are the technical programs offered for high school students at the Waterloo Career Center and advanced programming like the International Baccalaureate Diploma and Twice Exceptional, which is focused on academically gifted students with a disability. Quote, we feel that Waterloo has a competitive advantage that we didn't have before, she said, by developing programs not available elsewhere. We think we've worked really hard to provide signature programs. Lindemann noted, a larger district provides a lot more options and a lot more opportunities. And she pledged Waterloo School's educators will continue growing what's available. Quote, we're going to work to ensure our district provides some really unique opportunities for families and students, she said. We believe that we've accomplished that quite a bit over the last few years. A fiscal note from the Legislative Services Agency estimates $554,175 decrease in state per pupil funds for Waterloo schools under the bill, which would equate to 75 new open enrollments out of the district for classes starting in the fall. Another 57 students leaving at a cost of $431,832 under the new open enrollment option is estimated for the 2022-23 school year. Those estimates are based on averages in survey data for voluntary diversity plans and open enrollment denials during the past several years. Quote, we're hoping that the decrease in enrollment is less than predicted, said Lindemann. We're anticipating anything between 60 and 100. That's my guess for this next school year alone. I don't necessarily have a prediction for going forward. If Reynolds signs the bill, Waterloo schools would be required to grant open enrollment out to 34 students who are on a waiting list. It also has 5 students waiting to open enroll into the district. Another 35 students were approached for open enrollment out next fall, after a total of 69 requests by March 1st. Quote, our diversity bill never prohibited open enrollment. It just allowed us to balance open enrollment, said Lindemann. after the district's previous voluntary desegregation plan was outlawed by a 2007 U.S. Supreme Court decision, officials developed the diversity plan based on poverty measures. The plan balances the number of students from low-income and higher-income families transferring in and out of the district annually. But with a regular deadline waived this year, other families who didn't apply in a timely manner could also request to leave, Lindemann said. At this point, she is a little unsure about when there would be a final deadline. If the bill becomes law, she expects it to change the racial ethnic makeup of Waterloo schools. Quote, the desegregation plans, if you go way back to the history of them, they were put in place to stop what we call white flight, said Lindemann. More requests were generally received to open and roll out from families who were white and had a higher income. Quote, over time, can change our demographics by creating a district that has a higher minority and higher percentage of students on free and reduced meal prices. Waterloo's Board of Education has always decided to maintain the diversity plan, which focuses instead on high and low socioeconomic status for similar reasons. Quote, we have historically seen that same trend in our applications, she said. They are heavily skewed toward Caucasian students and families who are higher SES, unquote. U.S. rejoins climate fight. Leaders pledge climate cooperation. The story is filed by the Associated Press and begins with a photograph of the president in profile, and the caption says, President Joe Biden arrives to speak to the virtual leaders' summit on climate from the East Room of the White House on Thursday in Washington. Washington, the leaders of Russia and China put aside their raw worded disputes with U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday, long enough to pledge international cooperation on cutting climate wrecking coal and petroleum emissions in a live streamed summit showcasing America's return to the fight against global warming. Neither Vladimir Putin nor Xi Jinping immediately followed the United States and some of its developed allies in making specific new pledges to reduce damaging fossil fuel pollution during the first day of the two-day U.S.-hosted summit. But climate advocates hoped the high-profile, if glitch-ridden, virtual gathering would kickstart new action by major polluters, paving the way for a November UN meeting in Glasgow, critical to drastically slowing climate change over the coming decade. The entire world faces a moment of peril, but also a moment of opportunity, Biden declared, speaking from a TV-style chrome blue set for the virtual summit of 40 world leaders. Participants appeared one after the other on screen for what appeared to be a mix of live and recorded addresses. The signs are unmistakable, Biden said. The science is undeniable. The cost of inaction keeps mounting, unquote. Biden's new U.S. commitment, timed to the summit, would cut America's fossil fuel emissions by as much as 52% by 2030. It comes after 4 years of international withdrawal from the issue under President Donald Trump, who mocked the science of climate change and pulled the U.S. out of landmark 2015 Paris Climate Accord. Biden's administration this week is sketching out a vision of a prosperous, clean energy United States, where factories churn out cutting-edge batteries and electric cars for export, line workers relay an efficient national electrical grid, and crews cap abandoned oil and gas rigs and coal mines. But Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell dismissed the administration's plans as costly and ineffective. Quote, this is quite the 1-2 punch, McConnell said in a Senate speech Thursday. Toothless requests of our foreign adversaries and maximum pain for American citizens. At the summit, Japan announced its own new 46% emissions reduction target, and South Korea said it would stop public financing of new coal-fired power plants, potentially an important step toward persuading China and other coal-reliant nations to curb building and funding of new ones as well. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, one of the leaders shown watching summit proceedings in the coronavirus pandemic's familiar Brady Bunch-style multi-box conference screen, said his nation wound up its fossil fuel production costs from 30% to at least 40%. Travel precautions under the pandemic compelled the summit to play out on live stream, limiting opportunities for spontaneous interaction and negotiation. Its opening hours were sometimes marked by electronic echoes, random beeps, and off-screen voices. But the summit also marshaled an impressive display of the world's most powerful leaders speaking on the single issue of climate change. China's Xi, whose country is the world's biggest emissions culprit, followed by the United States, spoke first among the other global figures. He made no reference to disputes over territorial claims, trade, and other matters that had made it uncertain until Wednesday that he would even take part in the U.S. summit. And he said China would work with America in cutting emissions. Quote, to protect the environment is to protect productivity, and to boost the environment is to boost productivity. It's as simple as that, Xi said. Putin and his government have been irate over Biden's characterization of him as a killer for Russia's aggressive moves against its opponents. And he is under pressure this week over the declining health of jailed opposition figure Alexei Navalny. But he made no mention of those disputes in his own climate remarks. Quote, Russia is genuinely interested in galvanizing international cooperation so as to look further for effective solutions to climate change, as well as to all other vital challenges, Putin said. Russia, by some measures, is the world's fourth biggest emitter of climate-damaging fossil fuel fumes. Climate efforts in recent years have proved a forum where even rival world leaders want to be seen as putting aside disputes to serve as international statesmen and women, even though the cumulative output of fossil fuel emissions is still hurtling the Earth toward disastrous temperature rises. The pandemic made gathering world leaders for the climate summit too risky, so Biden's staff built a small set in the East Room that looked like it was taken from a daytime talk show. Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris joined Secretary of State Antony Blinken and White House climate envoy John Kerry at a horseshoe-shaped table set up around a giant potted plant to watch fellow leaders' speeches. The Biden administration's pledge would require by far the most ambitious U.S. climate effort ever, nearly doubling the reductions that the Obama administration had committed to in the Paris Climate Accord. German Chancellor Angela Merkel was one of the many allies welcoming the U.S. return after Trump. Quote, I'm delighted to see the United States is back to work together with us in climate politics, Merkel declared in her virtual appearance. Quote, because there can be no doubt about the world needing your contribution if we really want to fulfill our ambitious goals, unquote. Let's turn now to the Cedar Valley page and begin with the Call the Courier column. Question, whatever happened to the Lou Dobbs show on Fox? Answer, Dobbs was taken off the air by Fox Business Network in early February. According to industry insiders, many advertisers didn't want to be associated with his far-right content. So although his show was the highest-rated program on a low-rated network, it was a money loser. The last straw came when Dobbs was named in a $2.7 billion lawsuit filed by a voting technology company, Smartmatic, which accused Dobbs of having been, quote, one of the primary proponents of a disinformation campaign against Smartmatic. Question, when did it become legal to advertise prescription drugs on TV? What would it take to go back to those times? Answer, direct-to-consumer advertising of drugs has been legal in the USA since 1985, but only really took off after 1997, when the Food and Drug Administration eased rules requiring companies to offer a detailed list of side effects. The courts have ruled product advertisements are a form of commercial free speech, so banning the ads would be difficult. Question, could President Biden declare a national emergency on the southern border for as long as needed? Answer, possibly. President Trump declared a state of emergency at the southern border on February 19, 2019, and was immediately challenged in federal court by California and 16 other states on separation of powers grounds. While some lower courts blocked the division of Defense Department funds for use building a border wall, some appellate courts ruled the administration's favor, and the issue was still tied up in the courts when Biden rescinded the declaration in January. Question: where can I go to find what an area looked like in Waterloo back in the late 1800s? Answer: Grout Museum of History and Science, 503 South Street, is the place to start. If you're looking for something specific, check the museum's archivist. The Waterloo Public Library Reference Desk can help you locate books on Waterloo history. Or if you're at Waterfalls Car Wash on San Marnin Drive, you can study the historical photos as you're waiting for your car. Question: what are the words to the Hy-Vee commercial? Answer: there are several Hy-Vee commercials featuring different lyrics to Our House that can be found on YouTube. Lyrics are altered to fit whatever the grocery store is promoting. The original song is the 1983 hit Our House by British ska band Madness. Question: why was Dubuque's Iron Man Homecoming printed in your paper but not Waterloo's? And another caller asked, why did KWWL cover the Iron Man Battalion coming home and you didn't? Answer: the Courier printed stories and photos from two recent homecomings at Waterloo Regional Airport, but none from Dubuque. On April 8th, we printed a story and several photos when 100 Army National Guard soldiers from Charlie Company, part of the 1st Battalion of the 103rd Infantry Regiment, the Iron Man Battalion, arrived in Waterloo, returning from a more than 10-month deployment in Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates. On April 13th, we printed an A1 photo and a montage of several photos on page A8 of about 150 soldiers from Headquarters Company, 133rd Infantry Battalion of the Iowa Army National Guard, returning from the same deployment. Prosecutors state 2019 homicide was an ambush and an execution. Stories filed by Jeff Reinitz. And it opens with a photograph of Raymond Burden Jr. in court following open statements Thursday at his murder trial. Waterloo. Chavondas Martin was ambushed and executed by the brother of the man Martin had been acquitted of killing, according to prosecutors. Chavondas Martin's body was found in an alley behind a South Street apartment building around 5:30 a.m., May 31, 2018. He had been dead for about 2 hours. The blood had dried, Blackhawk County Attorney Brian Williams told jurors Thursday, as trial started for Raymond Burden Jr., one of two people charged with shooting Martin and leaving him to die. Quote, you will find this homicide, the number of shots, the location of shots, was an ambush and an execution, Williams said. Burden of Waterloo is charged with first-degree murder as he has pleaded not guilty. Defense attorney Les Blair decided to outline the defense case during opening statements, but he urged jurors not to rush to judgment. Quote, make sure you keep an open mind and listen to all the evidence from both sides before reaching any conclusions, Blair said. Williams told jurors the roots of the case stretched back to a 2016 attack on Logan Avenue, in which people in an SUV opened fire on Burden and others. Burden survived, but one of the bullets struck and killed his brother, 21-year-old Octavius Brown. Chavondas Martin and three others were charged in the fatal drive-by shooting. One pleaded to lesser charges, one was convicted of murder, and Chavondas Martin and another man were found not guilty at trial in February 2018. 3 months later, Chavondas Martin was dead. Williams said the hours leading up to the May 2019 slaying, Chavondas Martin and Burden taunted each other with threatening text messages, and Burden and his acquaintances were looking for Martin. Burden enlisted Chavondas Martin's cousin, Dinesha Martin, to contact him and make arrangements to pick him up in a Jeep. The plan was to set him up, Williams said. They set up an opportunity to meet. Chavondas Martin was taken to an area of South Street where the assailants, Burden, Shaquan Coffer, and an unidentified third man entered the Jeep, Williams said. Chavondas Martin knew he was going to die. He said something to the effect of, "You got me," William said. He said Burden had a semi-automatic handgun and Coffer had a revolver. Neighbors remember hearing what they thought were fireworks around 3:30 a.m., but no one called the police at the time. Martin's body was found with 9 gunshot wounds coming from both the front and behind, 2 in his head and neck area, 4 in his torso, and 3 in his legs. The head and neck wounds were delivered at close range, Williams said. Police found 5 spent shell casings at the scene, apparently from the semi-automatic pistol. Following the shooting, the group went to Cedar Rapids, where they were observed at a Casey's General Store, a Fast Mart convenience store, and a Hy-Vee supermarket between 5:30 a.m. and 6:50 a.m. Burden later drove Dinesha Martin to the Chicago area, Williams said. She was detained on murder charges in November 2018 after she was found living in Virginia. Coffer hasn't been charged in the slaying. He is currently in federal prison, serving time in connection with a .38 caliber revolver that police found during a June 2018 traffic stop, according to court records. Testimony in the case is scheduled to continue Friday. Spring Blooms at Hearst Center, filed by Melody Parker, and the story begins with several photographs showing flowering bulbs, a magnolia tree, and yellow daffodils. Cedar Falls. Spring is bursting with color in the sculpture garden at the Hearst Center for the Arts. Thousands of daffodils, grape, hyacinth, crocuses, squills, tulips, and other spring flowering bulbs are creating an ever-changing display for the public to enjoy. For Brad Matlocks, each bloom represents a joyful tribute to his late husband, Jared Miller. Maddox, a master gardener and retired special education teacher at River Hill School, planted thousands of bulbs last fall with the help of 4 volunteers, including City of Cedar Falls staffer Kim Armstrong. Quote, "It was a healing thing to plant them, knowing they'll return year after year," Maddox said. Miller died February 26, 2020, after having undergone heart surgery. He was 49. He'd been home just one day, went out for a walk, and died, Maddox said. Devastated by the loss, unable to hold a memorial service as the coronavirus pandemic began, "I needed to do something," he said. Miller had worked as a mortgage server at Viridian Credit Union. "They gave me a lot of memorial money, plus I had other memorials, and I wanted to do something with it. I'm the gardener, and Jared helped me with the yardscape and mowing the yard. He liked to give me flowers. We're very involved in the Hearst, and we both enjoyed the sculpture garden a lot," said Maddox. He used the memorial funds to order bulbs from bulk from his favorite reliable Dutch nursery source. "All of the flowers we planted, I've had success with in my own garden and put on a good show. King Alfred and Iced Follies daffodils, the yellow and white species tulip, and we planted a lot of squill. I chose bulbs that are good for multiplying and naturalizing, and I consulted with Kim. He also planted foxtail lilies that won't bloom until early summer. Volunteers spent 2 or 3 days in the garden on crisp autumn days, while Maddox devoted 5 days to the project. The process gave him time to grieve and to celebrate his husband's life and their life together. After the spring show is over, Maddox will continue creating flower arrangements using cut flowers from his own garden and vases from his extensive collection and deliver them for display at the Hearst Center. He also belongs to Thursday Painters, which meets at the Art Center. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, April 23rd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to the sports page and hear what happened at the Drake Relays yesterday. Drake Relays Boys Roundup, Cedar Falls Seniors Put on a Show, filed by Dick Petteros. It begins with a photograph with the caption, "Cedar Falls Alex Majuka, TJ Tomajanovich, Joel Burris, and Will Eastman celebrate after placing first and setting a new record for the 4x400-meter relay on Thursday during the Drake Relays at Drake Stadium in Des Moines, Cedar Falls. If Dick Homewood were playing poker, the rest of the table would have folded. Cedar Falls coach couldn't contain his joy after looking down at his watch during the team's first time trial of the season. Quote, "It was just the most exciting I've ever seen him," Cedar Falls senior T.J. Tomjanovich recalls. "He knew right then and there that his team, we had the potential to do some real damage this year. A couple months later, we're finally able to show everyone what we've got." Cedar Falls senior middle distance runners maintained their training routine through a canceled junior season. That work finally paid off Thursday when they had the opportunity to put on a show in front of the state's track and field elite at Drake Relays. Tomjanovich anchored the 4x400-meter relay comprised of classmates Alec Majuka, Will Eastman, and Joel Burris to Drake Relay's record time of 3 minutes 16.67 seconds that eclipsed a mark of 3 minutes 17.77 set by West Des Moines Valley in 2006. Majuka, Eastman, Jack Jorgensen, and Tomjanovich opened their day with a championship in the 4x800 in 7 minutes 53.37 seconds, and Tomjanovich added a victory in the open 400 at 48 seconds 11. Commitment and culture are the two words that come to Tomjanovich's mind when detailing his team's four-year journey to the top. Quote, "It's just the atmosphere and mentality that we have," Tomjanovich said. "We know and believe that we can go out there and compete with anyone and be the best. We train like the best." Quote, "It's just this whole culture that we have where we know we can do it. We know we have the resources. We know we have the talent, the coaching, the commitment from our school, our community. It's just a great culture we have up in Cedar Falls." The Tigers' middle distance crew left a field of the state's best, chasing throughout a schedule condensed from 3 days to one. Eastman opened with a 1 minute 57.68 leg to find early separation during the 4x800. Iowa City Liberty drew even with the Tigers' Majuka and Jorgensen by the end of legs two and three, setting up an anchor leg showdown between the state's individual 800-meter leaders, Tomjanovich and Bowen Gripe. Gripe caught up to Tomjanovich with 200 meters remaining before the Cedar Falls standout found another gear and left no doubt while capturing his first of three Drake Relays championship flags. Quote, "My job was just to give TJ the baton in first so he can anchor home the race," Jorgensen said. Quote, "Ultimately, what was going through my mind is I need to compete. All that matters is that we competed and ran our best. At the end of the day, it worked out. As seniors, we built this chemistry since freshman year. Every year we feed off each other, and we hold each other accountable. I just think this represents the bond that we've created throughout this." That bond was evident when Tomjanovich gave Eastman a high five and pat on the back before they entered the starting blocks on lane 4 and 5 of the open 400. Tomjanovich clocked 48 seconds 11 to defeat Ankeny's Tyrese Miller, 48.44. Eastman was fifth in 49.49. Quote, "Anyone that has ever run at Drake or State or anything here, looking at that crowd and the world-class track, it's nerve-wracking," Tomjanovich said. Quote, "Having a teammate right next to me, lanes 4 and 5, that was definitely calming before the gun fired." In the 4x400, Eastman won the sprint to the break line and provided separation for the Tigers. Quote, "It's like two races in one, the first one to the cone and then to the third leg," Eastman said. Joel Burris, who also competed in the Drake 400 hurdles and high jump, extended the advantage before Tomjanovich closed with a 47.27 split for the fifth best 4x400 relay all time at the Iowa high school level. In the Drake Relays girls roundup, Cedar Falls Brinker and Waverly Shellrock's Regan Dahlquist come up clutch, story filed by Nick Petteros, and begins with a photograph with the caption, "Waterloo's East's Nyla Norman crosses the finish line in the 4x100-meter relay on Thursday during the Drake Relays at Drake Stadium in Des Moines. Des Moines, pressure makes diamonds. Cedar Falls junior Maya Brinker and Waverly Shellrock senior Reagan Dahlquist, were down to their third strike in field events at Thursday's Drake Relays. They both came up clutch. Brinker's performance under pressure led to a runner-up finish in the discus, while Dahlquist made an adjustment and scored and soared to fourth in the high jump of this all-class meet. Brinker had scratched on the first two attempts of her Drake Relays discus debut, needing a qualifying mark to advance to the final round. The Tigers junior put everything together and surpassed her personal record by more than 7 feet at 130 and 10 inches. That effort led up to a second place behind the winning 140-1 mark from Oskaloosa's Sophia Dykstra. Entering the discus circle knowing she needed to mark, Brinker made a concerted effort to start slow and then accelerate through the circle. Quote, "This was the time to do it if I were going to do it," Brinker said. "It was really nice to be able to rally back from the two scratches. I knew that was my last chance to be able to make it to finals and get three more throws. I really put it all out there," unquote. Cedar Falls throws coach Bridget Duffy wasn't surprised by Brinker's poise. During a meet in Waterloo last week, Brinker struggled early before coming back with a 123 to win. The Tigers coach is hopeful that Brinker can hit 135 to 140 by season's end. "She makes me so proud," Duffy said. "She does really good at being able to take a minute, reset herself, and then get that throw out there." While Brinker has also found success in softball and bowling, she says track and field have become her favorite sport. Quote, "They're all pretty mental sports, so it's nice to be able to have the mental toughness transfer from sport to sport," Brinker pointed out. In the high jump, Waverly Shellrock's Dahlquist encountered a subtle roadblock when she knocked the bar off twice at 5'3¾". The Gohawk focused on arching her back and cleared the final attempt before elevating over 5'5¾" on her first attempt. The early misses were all that kept Dahlquist out of a second-place tie as she finished fourth. Maddie Olson of Sheldon and Liana Green of Waukee also bowed out at 5'5¾". Keokuk's Miracle Eyeless cleared 5'7¾" for the win. Quote, "I got really nervous, to be honest, once I missed those first two attempts," Dahlquist said. "I just tried to calm myself down. I took some deep breaths, and I said, I can do this, and I did it." Quote, "I'm really glad this happened, especially having missed this last year for Drake. It was kind of surreal coming back and then doing well," unquote. Hudson senior Kylie Saley has memories of winning a long jump state title and competing in the Drake Relays high jump and long jump as a sophomore inside Drake Stadium. She was thrilled to return for two events and create new memories on Thursday. Sally finished second in the long jump with a mark of 17'6¾". Shay Sinard of Carroll won the event at 18'1¼". "Drake Stadium is always breathtaking, and I'm just so excited to be back on the track again," Saline said. "It was tough not having last season, so the excitement of getting everybody back in the groove of things is really awesome and a feeling that can't be beat," unquote. Saley said she settled in as she felt her legs getting warmer during the competition. She improved from 17'4 to 17'5 to 17'6¾" on three consecutive attempts, demonstrating impressive consistency. Every inch mattered as places third through fifth were within 2.5 inches of the senior. For Saley, the competition didn't stop at Drake on Thursday. She drove up to Grundy Center for a track meet Thursday night. Quote, "It'll be fun back with my teammates," Saley said during a phone interview on the car ride to her second meet of the day. "Just competing as much as you can is always a blast." Dyke New Hartford took advantage of a chance to punch up against a field of sprinters from larger schools and put up quite a fight. The Wolverines quartet of seniors Eden Barrett, Alexis Jensen, and Jaden Bennett joined freshman anchor Shelby Ort to finish fourth in the 4x200-meter relay with a time of 1 minute 45.38 seconds. Ames won the race in 1 minute 42.36, followed by Waukee, 1 minute 43.61, and Dubuque Wallert at 1 minute 43.95. Quote, becoming a freshman, it's been an incredible experience running at Drake, let alone running with them, Ort said, looking back at her senior teammates during a post-race interview. That same quartet finished 11th in the sprint medley and 13th in the 4x100. They own Class 2A's top times in the 4x1 and the 4x2 and showed they can run with the big schools. Quote, I think it's awesome to have that competition, Barrett said. It's a good, humbling thing. It humbles you and allows you to compete to the best of your ability, unquote. Cedar Falls junior Maddie McFarland knew when the season started that her school had a special collection of hurdlers. The Tigers have continued to find progress. Cedar Falls' quartet of Lyron Bennett, Nolani Mattson, Joanna Dyken, and McFarland was clean over the hurdles in the shuttle hurdle relay, knocking over a second off its top time to place third in 1 minute 6.51. Waukee's championship time of 1 minute 1.21 was the third best in event history. West Des Moines Dowling was second in 1 minute 4.56. Quote, I had a great group of girls with me starting off in that relay, McFarland said. They go hard. Quote, at the beginning of the season, it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, we're good. Now, after these workouts, coming here running, it's just like, wow, we've improved a whole lot. We've got great coaches to help us out, unquote. Success in the 4x100 is becoming a tradition at Waterloo East. Thursday was no exception. The Trojans quartet of Villegia Wright, Alessa Horton, Jocelyn Nichols, and Nyla Norman qualified for the event final and placed fourth in the 4x100 in 49.6 seconds. Waukee won the event in 48.59. In college football, Northern Iowa's Jared Brinkman, MVFC's Defensive Player of the Year, Cedar Falls. Northern Iowa defensive tackle Jared Brinkman has been named the 2021 Missouri Valley Conference Defensive Player of the Year, announced the league Thursday. The defensive tackle from Iowa City led the MVFC with 9 tackles for loss while also tallying 3 quarterback hurries and forcing 2 fumbles. He had 4.5 TFLs and a sack against Missouri State. 8 other UNI players were honored with all-league recognition. Brinkman, linebacker Spencer Cuvier, and sophomore kicker Matthew Cook were named to the first team. Defensive end Bronte Wells and cornerback Austin Evans were second-team picks. Cornerback Omar Brown received Quan Hampton, and offensive tackle Trevor Penning earned honorable mention honors. Brinkman is the 10th Panther to win Defensive Player of the Year honors, and it is the 13th time since 1985 that a UNI defender has won the award. The last Panther to win it was Carter Schultz in 2016. The Buck Buchanan Award finalist, an award given to the top defensive player in the FCS, Brinkman finished with 38 tackles. Cuvier led the MVFC with 10.1 tackles per game and was second in the league in total tackles with 71. Cook led the MVFC with 15 made field goals. Evans tied for the team lead with 5 pass breakups, while Wells was second in the MVFC with 4.5 sacks despite playing in only 6 games. South Dakota State freshman Mark Gronowski was named newcomer Offensive and Freshman of the Year, while Missouri State's Bobby Petrino was named Coach of the Year. The all-newcomer team will be released on Friday. Now let's continue reading local news. In Metro Briefs, Unity Point offers walk-in vaccines. Waterloo. Anyone 16 and older can walk in to receive a COVID-19 vaccine from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Unity Point Clinic Express, located at United Medical Park, 1731 West Ridgeway Avenue. Additional community vaccine clinic locations will be updated daily at unitypoint.org/waterloo/vaccine. Those who prefer to schedule an appointment may call this phone number, area code 319-226-2600. For more information, visit unitypoint.org and click the COVID-19 vaccine dark blue button on the homepage. Mercy One hosts Vaccine Clinic, Waterloo. Mercy One will host a walk-in clinic for COVID-19 vaccinations from 1 to 4 p.m. Thursday at 432 King Drive in Waterloo. This site is the regular home for patients who visit Mercy One Waterloo, OBGYN, located on the Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center campus. All Iowans age 16 and older are eligible and encouraged to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. Mercy One will administer about 200 doses of the Pfizer vaccine at this walk-in clinic. Vaccine appointments take about 30 minutes. Please bring a photo ID, insurance card, and wear a mask. In addition to this walk-in clinic, Mercy One continues to schedule appointments in several Northeast Iowa communities. For more information on scheduling your COVID-19 vaccination, go to mercyone.org/getmyvaccine or call area code 319-272-1111. Mercy One is administering both Pfizer and Moderna vaccinations. Teenagers 16 years and older are eligible for the Pfizer vaccine, and adults 18 years and older are eligible for the Moderna vaccine. AmVets Plan Spam Breakfast, Cedar Falls. AmVets Post 49, 1934 Irving Street will host a spam brunch at 10 a.m. Saturday. The menu features spam, scrambled eggs, hash browns, cheesy hash browns, muffin, and frozen dessert. Cost is $8 at the door. There will be a drawing for Hormel gifts. Hormel donated spam for the event. Virtual inclusion event scheduled. The 2021 Inclusion Connection Conference virtual event will take place Monday and Tuesday. Theme is Inclusion, Embrace the Adventure. The 8th annual conference will provide people of all abilities information about how to access inclusive environments and assistive communication techniques. Keynote speakers will be Edlin Vallejo Pena, PhD, an author and director of the Autism and Communication Center of California, and Tracy Tresher, Larry Bissonette, Harvey Lavoie, and Pascal Chang from the movie Wretches and Jabberers. Breakout sessions will take place. For schedule and ticket information, go to inclusion-connection.org. Tickets are $99 for one day or $149 for both days. Students are $25. Scholarships are available for those in need. Contact corkerysarah@gmail.com for scholarship information by Sunday. Old Wine Bank adds loan officer. Old Wine. Tracy Tegertmeyer recently joined Community Bank of Old Wine as a real estate loan officer. She has been a mortgage lender for 11 years and has 25 years in the finance field, including banking and medical leasing. A graduate of Hawkeye Community College with an accounting degree, Tegertmeyer has also attended banking and lending compliance classes. Cedar Falls man gets alumni award. Western Illinois University School of Agriculture in Macomb, Illinois, has chosen Wayne Whips of Cedar Falls as one of six distinguished alumni. Whips, a 1977 graduate with a degree in agriculture education / animal science, is an account executive for Koloff Media. He has spent 40-plus years in marketing and sales, including 26 years in the ag sector. CBT among top-performing banks. QCR Holdings, parent company of Community Bank and Trust in Cedar Falls and Waterloo, was recently named one of the top 50 Best Performing Community Banks of 2020, with assets between $3 and $10 billion by S&P Global Market Intelligence. QCR Holdings, a multi-bank holding company, is one of the only banks in the area markets to make the list. Waterloo named Tree City USA Waterloo. Waterloo has been recognized as a Tree City USA for the 37th year in a row by the Arbor Day Foundation. Waterloo Park Superintendent City Forester Todd Derrifield received the award in a virtual ceremony. The foundation recognizes cities who have either a city forester or an active city tree board, have a tree ordinance, meet an annual per capita expenditure for its community forestry program, and have a tree planting and maintenance plan. Mayor Quentin Hart has designated April 21st through May 1st as Arbor Week in Waterloo. Arbor Day is April 30th. The Plant Waterloo program sold more than 200 trees for $20 each to residents, thanks to a donation from the Young Family Foundation. Those who have purchased a tree this year can pick up their tree at 4 p.m. April 29th. Waterloo Leisure Services is planting 36 new trees in the downtown Waterloo project that involves creating new tree planting pits in previously treeless sidewalks. The project has made possible by a Mid-American Energy Trees Please tree planting grant and input from David Deeds of JSA. Cooper Ritland Landscaping, Waterloo Engineering Department, Planning Department, and Street Department. For more information about Waterloo's forestry program, contact Ted Derrifield at this phone number, 291-4370. Fatal crash reported, filed by Jeff Reinitz, Clarksville. At least one person was killed in a two-vehicle collision south of Clarksville on Wednesday night. The identities of the people involved in the crash haven't been released. According to the Iowa State Patrol, a Toyota Sienna van was traveling north on Ridge Avenue and failed to stop at the intersection with Highway 3 around 10:25 p.m. The van and a Nissan Maxima, which was headed west on Highway 3, collided, according to the State Patrol. Both vehicles came to rest in the north ditch. The Butler County Sheriff's Office, Clarksville Police Department, Clarksville First Responders, Shell Rock Fire and EMS, and Waverly EMS responded to the scene. Shooting leaves one injured, one arrested. Filed by Jeff Reinitz. Waterloo. One person has been arrested in an early morning shooting in Waterloo. Police and paramedics were sent to a home at 414 Sunnyside Avenue shortly before 6 a.m. Thursday and found 20-year-old Aliyah Lewis with a gunshot wound in her leg. She was conscious and alert, and paramedics with Waterloo Fire Rescue took her to Unity Point Health Allen Hospital. Officers said her injuries aren't life-threatening. Officers found Jawankini Rajan Watkins, 24, outside the house, and a handgun was found nearby. Watkins was arrested for willful injury causing bodily injury, carrying weapons, and felon in possession of a firearm. Witnesses told police Watkins and Lewis had been involved in an argument sometime before the shooting, according to court records. Iowa sees jump in people hospitalized with COVID, filed by David Pitt of the Associated Press. Des Moines. Iowa public health officials reported a rise in coronavirus-related hospitalizations Thursday, with a 36% increase in patients admitted in the last 24 hours, and a slight increase in patients remaining in hospitals fighting the virus. Iowa Department of Public Health data show 235 people remain hospitalized Thursday, up from 219 the day before. Admissions in the last 24 hours surged to 52, an increase from 38 the previous 24-hour period. The numbers are significantly lower than in early November, when Iowa reached a peak of virus infections and was admitting more than 200 patients a day. But virus activity has increased in Iowa in recent weeks, a trend blamed in part to circulation of more easily spread variants first found in Europe and Brazil. There also has been an increase in infected people being treated in intensive care units, with the state reporting 56 ICU patients Thursday. State officials Thursday reported 531 more confirmed positive cases and 6 additional deaths, increasing the total to 5,899 deaths. The virus continues to spread most significantly among young adults, with 27% of the positive cases in the past 7 days being among people between age 18 and 29. In Iowa, 920,481 people are fully vaccinated, or 29% of the population, according to U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention data. On Wednesday, Governor Kim Reynolds voiced concern about vaccine hesitancy, saying it would hurt efforts to stop the virus spread. Iowa officials say 77 prisoners got virus vaccine overdoses. Fort Madison, filed by the Associated Press. Administration of the coronavirus vaccine has been halted at a Fort Madison prison after nursing staff there incorrectly gave 77 inmates overdoses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, the Iowa Department of Corrections said. The incident happened Tuesday, the Des Moines Register reported. Department spokesman Cord Overton told the newspaper in an email that once the error was realized, staff immediately sought guidance from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and from Pfizer. The inmates were notified of the overdose and are being closely monitored by medical staff, Overton said. The inmates affected have so far shown only the side effects commonly associated, including soreness at the injection site, body aches, fatigue, and fever, he said. The mother of one of the inmates affected, Kimberly Kohlhofer of Fairfield, said doctors told her son he and others had received 6 times the recommended dose. The Pfizer vaccine is packaged as a concentrate that must be diluted with saline solution. 2 nursing staff members who administered the vaccine to the 77 inmates have been placed on leave pending the outcome of an investigation, Overton said. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, April 23rd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And you may want to stay tuned to listen to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which will be read shortly. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.